This is Invest Talk, above average investing for the average investor. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, here's KPP President, Money Manager, Steve Peasley.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Monday edition of Invest Talk. If this is your first visit with us on Invest Talk, our mission is to help you become a better investor. It's very simple. There's no fast track to riches, no trick or secret lever you can pull or some system that you can use. If there's any kind of formula or special formula, it's this. Follow the rules and don't get distracted by noise. Don't succumb to fear or greed. And that is a lot easier said than done. Much easier said than done. But if you can follow those rules, don't get attracted or don't let fear and greed make your decisions for you. Follow the rules. I'm interested in a broad range of money topics. You may have questions about insurance. I have lots of experience in that field. I may be able to answer your questions on that if you want to. We all know we're nearing tax time. So you may have a question about taxes. I'm not an accountant, but I may be able to point you in the right direction. Of course, we spend much of our time talking about stocks here on Invest Talk. Marketable securities. Of all the ways you can invest your money, securities are the most liquid. A marketable security is any equity or debt instrument that is readily saleable. You can sell it and can be converted into cash right away. I'm talking about stocks, bonds, short-term commercial paper, certificates of deposit. They're all considered marketable securities. And of course, real estate is an investment too. It's not very liquid. I mean, it is liquid, but it's not very liquid. You can't just turn it around in a few hours. But marketable securities investors with liquidity of cash and the ability to earn a return when the assets are not being used. You could sell them quickly, whereas property is a little bit harder to sell. Of course, you can buy REITs, real estate investment trusts. That definitely is a marketable security. Kind of replaces your real estate if that's the area you want to be in. So you can be almost any area these days. You can invest almost anywhere. Isn't that interesting? Isn't that fascinating? I mean, not that many years ago, you couldn't trade currencies. You couldn't trade commodities. You didn't have ETFs in those areas. Now you do. And we're going to be talking about ETFs today, popularity of them, one of our talking points. So we're here to talk about whatever money matter is on your mind. So let's hear your question. Would you like to share some information about your portfolio? How is it made up? How did you construct it? What are you hoping to gain from it? Everybody wants to make money. That's not what I'm talking about. Are you interested in a conservative income type portfolio? Are you interested in super speculative stocks? Are you interested in a more balanced approach? And how do you know you're there, that's what you've done with your portfolio? You can ask me. I'll tell you what you've done. And, of course, do you own oil stocks? Do you own them right now? Should you? Now, 888-99-CHART is how you reach me during this 1 hour. You can do it anytime you want. That's also, I say anytime, I mean 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We're just live right now, 4 to 5 Pacific time. So let's answer this question that came in before we started today.
Yeah, hi. I'm basically just your average Joe out of Orange County. I've been in the mortgage business for about 5 years and was not very good with my money. And I'm looking to be a beginner investor, but I'm not quite sure on where to start. I'm not sure on how much money would your initial beginning investment be when you invest with a small company, whether it's aggressive or conservative, to actually make it worth your while, where it's something you can have turnaround in a matter of a year or so. Just a beginner trying to learn a little bit more about beginning and how much you should use to begin. Thanks.
Okay, first of all, you got to start thinking a little bit differently. It's not the amount that matters. It's the length of time that matters. So when you say I want to invest in about a year or so, you're thinking way too short in a time frame, because stock market doesn't work that way. Stock market works very good over time. Over a short period of time, you get a huge return, or you can lose half your money. You know, it depends on how risky you want to be. And most people don't know how to manage that risk. So my suggestion to you is start off with a comfortable amount of money that you are willing to risk, okay? And think long terms with it, long term meaning 5, 10, 15 years, and probably buy the S&P 500, which is SPY, an ETF. You can start by buying an index fund. And probably a good way to do it is dollar cost average in, put a certain amount in every couple of weeks, buy more and more and more over time. Long-term investment, like a retirement account, like a 401k, you're going to do it forever. That's how you be successful. Now, when you get it 100,000 plus, then you can, and you get more knowledgeable, and if you want to do it yourself, you still can, but then you can start buying individual stocks. Too many people think, well, I'm going to make a lot of money. I'm going to go out and buy Tesla. I'm going to go out and buy Netflix. I'm going to go out and buy... You don't do it that way. That's not how you're going to make money. Can you make money? Yes. But it's a foolish way to do it, because it's one stock. One stock could go out of business tomorrow, or it can triple tomorrow. Okay, fine. But that's not how you're going to make money. You want to make money consistently without a lot of, I don't mind taking risks, but make money consistently with it, managing that risk over time. That's the way you work it. Stock market is not, I'm just going to buy for a year and then take my money out. No, then don't get in the stock market. That doesn't work that way. It's not that kind of, and again, you can get lucky and pick the right time frame, but that's not how you make money. Everybody's paying attention to where it's going. It's the $2 trillion elephant in the room. ETF trend for 2015. $2 trillion in ETF. Do you realize that like in 2000, 2002, it was a fraction of that size in the ETF business? That's going to be one of our talking points today. The Dow Theory. You've heard me talk about it before. This is the oldest kind of timing model. This is the oldest timing model out there. And right now it's signaling a sell signal. But should we believe it? Well, let's talk about the Dow Theory and what it does. Not all Dow theorists believe they're on sell signal, but most of them do. PIMCO, remember PIMCO? The world's largest bond fund. It still probably is. I'm not sure. It's out in Newport Beach, bond mutual fund family. They lost $11.6 billion in January, so that's how much money people withdrew. That's a good sign, because in December they lost $19 billion out of the funds. They've been losing, well, we'll talk about it. We're going to talk about PIMCO and what's going on there. And before you retire, these are my little short list of things you should look at or think about before you retire. Not 6 months before you retire. I mean a year, 2 years, 4 years before you retire, 5 to 10 years, these are things you have to say, okay, this is what I need to decide, what I need to think about, and make decisions based on these things. And I want to talk about, if we get to an opinion poll by Norini Rubini, he's one of the smartest guys out there, and what he's thinking about QEs. And there was a survey, Colorado has best and Connecticut the worst home price growth in 2014. I thought you might be interested in that. I got more than we'll ever get to, probably. Hopefully we can get to them all. I really like to get to them all.
Do you have questions about FDIC security, mortgages, money market funds, losses to your retirement plans? Give us a call today, 888-99-CHART.
Let's go to Daniel, Walnut Creek. How are you doing, Daniel?
Good. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks for the call.
My question is this. I was laid off in June. I'm 30 years old.
Okay.
And I have my 401k at my old company, and then I just got hired on with a new company.
Right.
Now, I have a Roth IRA also.
Yes.
I'm not sure what I should do with my old 401. Should I keep it there, roll it into my Roth, or create a traditional?
If you're asking me, you're 30 years old. I like the fact that you have a Roth. How much is in that old 401k?
About $30,000.
See, if you roll it into the Roth IRA, which you can do, by the way, then you're going to have $30,000 income that you're going to pay taxes on, and I hate that. Just hate it.
Mm-hmm.
I would probably roll it into a regular IRA. I would not leave it where it is because I'm afraid that you'll forget about it. They don't have very good choices usually. You know, you just kind of let it ho-hum. I would roll it into an IRA somewhere, and then I'd have a Roth IRA and a regular IRA, and I would put money in that Roth. How much is in your Roth, by the way?
Just like $10,000.
When a Roth gets up to about $30,000 equal to your regular IRA, then I would feel like you can add to both. But are they matching money in your new 401k? Are they matching for you?
Yeah, they're matching.
So you go for that first.
Yeah. I'm going to try to max out the best I can with the Roth, and then max out the best I can with my new 401. And just keep my new traditional.
Yep, that's how I would do it.
Okay.
Hey, Daniel, it makes perfect sense to me.
Perfect. Thank you for answering my question.
Thanks, Daniel. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Be sure to sign up to become an InvestTalk Insider. You can get instant access to helpful investment watch lists and chart lessons. You can open our library of webinars like Doing Dividends Right, 30-minute crash course on dividend investing. It's always free, too, being an InvestTalk Insider. It's free. Sign up on investtalk.com. 888-99-CHART is how to reach me right now. You're with any money topic you may have. And we want to hear your questions on InvestTalk.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
888-99-CHART, let's talk to Gene in North Carolina. How are you doing, Gene?
Hi, thanks for taking my call, Steve.
Thank you.
I was wondering if you could explain a term that's used in the oil industry. I think it's pronounced contango or contango.
Contango. It's not just used in the oil industry, Gene. You just probably heard it recently because everybody's talking about oil. It's because it's a situation concerning futures price of commodities. Okay, so let's say to make it simple, it refers to a situation in which the price of the commodity today is lower, or is it higher or lower? Let's see, the price is below the current price. Okay. So the price of today, the price is lower, and the price in the future is higher. So that you would say, well, why would I buy a future when I can buy it today at a lower price? Why would I buy the future of oil when I can buy it today at a lower price? That's abnormal. That's a contango situation. Well, some reasons why you would do it, because you don't want to take possession of it today. It might be you don't want to store it and take possession of it today. But so a contango is nothing more than where the future price of a commodity, the future price of the commodity is higher. Because most time when you promise to buy something in the future, it's at a much lower price. Or at least lower, because you're guaranteeing somebody that you're going to take possession of it. So why are they talking about it? Because a lot of investors, smart investors, can arbitrage that odd situation. So it's just a matter of a commodity price today is lower than it is 2 years from now, 5 years from now on the futures market.
Hey, okay? Thanks a lot.
Okay, thanks for the call. Appreciate it, Gene. Shoke, hold on. From Milipedis, we'll talk about oil. Hold on. I'm portfolio manager Steve Peasley. It's a tool you can use anytime. It measures your tolerance for risk. It's a really great tool. There's nothing that's more important in planning your retirement than with a strategy than knowing how much risk you want to take. It's free at investtalk.com.
Listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
How about if we go to Jim in Chula Vista? Hi, Jim.
Hi, how are you today?
Good, thanks for calling.
Sometimes I've heard you say the price of a stock is $18.75.
Yes.
And you're going to place an order?
Yes.
But you don't buy it for $18.75, you buy it cheaper.
We try to, yes. Yeah, we always bid less.
Okay, so in other words, when you get ready to do a trade, like on a stock trade or something, it'll have a bid and ask price?
Yep.
Okay, I didn't understand that. That's what I wanted to find out.
Yeah, on our stock market, all it is an auction. Think about an auction. Someone is trying to sell you something, and someone else is trying to buy something. You guys got to get together on what price you want to pay for that. Well, you don't want to pay what someone is asking. You know?
That's right. You always want to get it cheaper.
That's right. We never go to what they're asking. You know? I mean, but it's hard sometimes because we see what everybody is asking. You know, we see the depth of the market where it might be difficult for you as an individual to see it. We know that there's a bid there for this much and a bid there for this much. There's an offer for this much. You know, we see it. And we say, well, I'm going to put mine right here. And we wait to see if it comes and catches us.
It's kind of like buying a house. They'll have an asking price. And then you say, well, that's a little steep, I think. I'll give you $450,
exactly.
But they're asking $480.
That's exactly what it is, except that you're talking about a piece of real estate called a stock.
Right. Very clarified. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Jim. Appreciate the call. Let's go talk to Joe in Fremont. How you doing, Joe?
I'm doing fine, Steve.
Thanks for calling.
I just received a letter from my mutual fund saying that they want to convert to a closed-end fund, and I was wondering what you thought about that.
Actually, that's not a bad thing. So what they're doing is they want to limit the number of shares they're issuing out there. They want to limit. They don't want to have unlimited. Now, what's going to happen when they do that, Joe, is that your mutual fund, instead of selling at the net asset value of the exact value of the holdings that's inside the fund, now can sell at a premium or a discount to that net asset value.
Generally, don't they sell at a discount?
Not necessarily. Right now, many of them are, yes, right now. But in bull phases, they sell at a premium. It's not necessarily a bad thing. It's probably on balance more of a good thing because they're trying to limit the number of shares. One of the reasons they do that is they're gathering too much money to stay with what they're trying to do. So they're trying to limit the inflow of money. And that means that the manager of that fund is saying, you know what? I'm having trouble. Every day I get another $1 billion or $100 million, and I can't invest that much money that fast. You have to figure out why he's doing it, but that is probably the best answer that you could get and probably the right answer.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. So it's not bad. Joe, thanks. Appreciate the call.
You work hard for your money. Why isn't it working harder for you?
And looking at the chart, do you have to look at this the opposite of like a normal stock?
Ask your question. 888-99-CHART is the number. This is Invest Talk on radio and investtalk.com. Our listener line is open 24/7 for your questions. Hear the answer live on radio and online 4 to 5 or the playback anytime on investtalk.com.
Joe in Oceanside. How you doing, Joe?
Hey, Steve. I called you regarding an insurance question, and I'm calling you again because I have another one. Not pertaining to me, but one of my wife's coworkers. She's 21 years old. She has one child. She's a single mother that's 2 years old. She was speaking to a guy that he was trying to sell her universal life insurance. And so I wanted to get your take on what you think will be best for her to get.
I would not get universal life insurance if I was her. I would not. In my personal opinion, she should get a quote on the universal life insurance, okay?
It's a $500,000.
Okay, let's say it's $500,000. Her premium is going to be, I don't know, $200 a month. Do you know what it is?
It's $107 for the first year.
$107 for a month, the first year?
Uh-huh.
Now she should go out and get a term life policy quote. Term, maybe from a different guy.
Okay.
Term life insurance policy quote for the same $500,000.
Okay.
And that's probably going to be $15 a month, by the way. She's 21.
Yep.
That could be $10 a month. What she should do then is take the difference, the $90 per month difference, and just start putting it into an IRA and start investing it. And she will make a lot more money doing that than she would make using the universal life policy. They sell it to you saying it's an investment.
IRA? A Roth IRA or a regular IRA?
At 21, I do a Roth IRA. And she'll make a lot more money over the life of that insurance product than she ever would buying the universal life.
Would you be opposed to opening up a mutual fund like you suggested?
No, I would definitely suggest that she do that, yes.
So what kind of mutual fund? I know you said no load.
Always look for your no load funds, just a no load mutual fund. She can get it at, she can go to Schwab and open up a Schwab One account. She can do a RIDEX. She can go to Vanguard, different places. All no-load funds. Joe, appreciate the call.
Thank you very much, Steve.
Thank you very much for the call. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. What's on your mind? What do you want to talk about? We have, you know, I have a number of subjects I want to discuss. One being ETFs. You know, are ETFs where you need to be? ETFs have grown from a few hundred billion dollars to a $2 trillion business. And what you're seeing is you're seeing the mutual fund industry being eaten up by the ETF industry. Now, make sure you understand, the mutual fund industry is still a lot bigger than ETFs. I mean, 8 or 9 times bigger. And why are the ETFs so popular? Because they're cheaper. Now, the only area the ETFs haven't really taken off is managed ETFs. Most of them are indexes or tracking the sector, which is probably a good thing. ETFs, I think I like them. I use them. I think you should start using them. Don't mean you don't have any mutual funds, but consider ETFs if you're indexing. Do you know what a portfolio turnover is? It could be costing you big bucks. Coming up in the next half hour on InvestTalk 101. Question. It's going to be a question. 888-99-CHART is how you reach us right now on InvestTalk.
Our InvestTalk podcast distribution is made possible by KPP Financial. And we're grateful that you subscribe and listen each day. You hear us talk about portfolio checkups in California. If you're not near enough to take advantage of those, Steve schedules a limited number of conferences on Skype or just the plain old phone. You can send copies of statements, and Steve can make some suggestions if you'd like. It's very informal. To find out more and schedule a time, just go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Steve and write him a note. Listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
888-992-4278. Invest Talk is a two-way conversation, but if you have a question between programs, you can still call and ask. Same number, 888-99-CHART. And let's go to Cy in Oceanside. How you doing, Cy?
How you doing, sir?
Good.
I'm a beginning investor.
Okay.
I have a question about OCT. Are they stock, or if you buy it, are they easy to sell?
What, over-the-counter?
Over-the-counter tray, right?
Oh, these are, you're talking about pink sheet stocks. They call them pink sheets.
Oh, okay.
Over-the-counter, it's called also pink sheets. And the reason why they call them pink sheets is because the way people file them, they are on pink paper. Don't ask me why. That's where it came from. To me, most pink sheet stocks will go out of business. Okay, I'll let you know for sure. You can make a ton of money or you can lose all your money on these stocks. And it's really not a good idea for as a beginner to even mess with any of them. They're too risky. They're very low priced and they're usually manipulated. People push them up and down and take advantage of other people buying them. They're too easily pushed up and down. The liquidity is too small.
Okay,
Sai, I appreciate the call. We're going to go talk to Judy in San Diego. How are you doing, Judy?
Hi, nice to hear your show. I listen every day. Unfortunately, I don't get off till 4:30, so I get the last half every day.
Oh, sorry. Well, the first half's probably no good anyway, so I don't get warmed up. Thanks for listening, though.
I was calling about double dip recession. I know you speak about it all the time, and I think I even looked on your glossary on your website, and I didn't get an explanation. Could you give me the rundown on that?
Sure. You know, a recession is where there's 2 quarters in a row of shrinking GDP, gross domestic product, okay? That's what a recession is. So a double dip recession is like within a couple of years, 2 years. There's no real, Jody, there's no real definite definition, okay? But a double dip is where we go back into shrinking GDP within a couple of years of the first recession. That means two quarters of shrinkage of GDP in a row. Now, we've only had this happen once since the Great Depression, and it was caused by the second dip was that inflation was starting to take off, and the Fed started to raise the rates quickly to put a stop to the inflation that they were fearing, and that threw us right back into a recession about a year and a half after the first one ended.
Uh-huh.
That's the double dip we're talking about.
Okay, thank you, Steve. Bye-bye.
Thank you for the call. The Dow Theory. The Dow Theory says... This is kind of a timing model. It's been around, the longest one, the oldest one out there. Okay, it's supposed to be, according to the quote-unquote experts, flashing a sell signal for the market. So the market's heading downward. It wouldn't feel like it being up 305 points today, but that's what it said. Okay, this is where they're reading. It made a top in December, okay? The Dow Theory goes, if the transports and the Dow Industrials top... and then have a significant drop. Now, that's the trick. What's a significant drop? Kind of nebulous, isn't it? Well, according to the Dow theorists, we had a significant drop in mid-January. And then, after it fails to recover and goes back down below the most recent bottom, when it dropped, it had a significant drop, and drops again below that significant drop, that's a sell signal. And we had the failure in January, and the Dow Theory says, well, this would now have a trend change and it should be down. That's what they say. This is my problem with buying into it right now. I don't think it was a significant drop. What, 3-4%? That's not a significant drop, I don't think. I think a significant drop is at least 10. But, you know, who am I to argue? Now, not all Dow theorists think it was a significant drop. Okay. But most do. So they're calling for a bear market. I don't know. I think it's premature. PIMCO, you know who PIMCO is. They are the premier bond fund manager. They've had a lot of problems. I want to talk about the redemptions they've been faced with and why. Time for Invest Talk 101, a lesson in everyday investing. Let's quiz you first. What could be draining money away from your portfolio in the forms of fees? Okay, without you even noticing it. You wouldn't even see it. And it is in the mutual fund that you own. I'll have the answer coming up next.
You've heard Steve talk about the 401k solution. It's a way to save your company time and money when it comes to administering your 401k plan. And it improves the quality of choices for employees. To find out more, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Investments tab.
And now our InvestTalk 101 question, what could be draining money away from your portfolio in the form of fees? And we're talking about the term that you should get to know more about, and that's portfolio turnover. Now, Investopedia defined it as a measure of how frequently assets within a fund are bought and sold by the managers. Portfolio turnover is calculated by taking either the total amount of new securities purchased and the amount of securities sold. So if you bought 100 securities in 1 year and sold 100 securities, would that be 100% turnover? You saw, bought and sold. See, that's how you determine portfolio. Why is that? Why would every mutual fund has a management fee inside of it, right? And so does every ETF, by the way. They all have management fees. But if a mutual fund has high turnover, 200-400%. Every buy and sell that they do, there is a transaction cost that you don't see. There is, even though it's small. But the more they have turnovers, hundreds of percent turnovers, and that's not uncommon, by the way. It's not uncommon. Then you're paying more and more. That comes out of the net asset value of that fund, so it's out of your pocket every time. Now, maybe some funds, you want to do that. I'm not suggesting it's a bad thing. It's not necessarily a bad thing if the overall net profit is doing very well and the manager is doing a really good job. It's just far and few between that is true. Far and few between. So just pay attention to portfolio turnover and compare that with the peer group of returns for the same kind of fund. Why would you pick one that's turning over really fast and not doing better than its peers? You wouldn't. Anyways, that's InvestTalk 101. If you have questions on this topic or any other money matter, please get through to us at 888-99-CHART. You can also send me a note that will come directly to me. Just click on Contact Steve on InvestTalk.com. That's with two T's, InvestTalk.com. Or at InvestTalk on Twitter, at InvestTalk on Twitter. And if you want to hear this program again or refer to someone else, well, you can. We have the past 10 InvestTalks archived for you.
Annuities, asset allocation, reading stock market trends, building a truly balanced portfolio. If it's important to you and you want to know more about it, we're here for you. 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART. We're going to talk to Tony in Corpertino. How are you doing, Tony?
Yeah, hi, Steve. Hey, thanks for your program.
Thank you.
Not really for me, but for a younger person who's like 30 or 40 years old, what is wrong with a strategy of like dollar cost averaging into the S&P 500 like every month or every other month for like 20 or 30 years?
That's an excellent way to invest in the stock market. There is no downside to that, in my personal opinion. I think a young person should do that. Now, Tony, this is the problem I have with most people. That's what they should do, dollar cost average. When the market collapses, keep dollar cost averaging. But they don't, Tony. Study after study after study has shown that people don't invest when the market collapses. They stop. And then study after study shows them to start back up after the market recovered. And that's a recipe for losing money. But if they did it, if they could just ignore it and just continue doing it 20, 30 years, they'll be far ahead of the game. And they don't have to hire people like me. They don't have to buy a mutual fund. They can do it, buy an ETF, the S&P 500. Yeah, the cheapest one, or go to Vanguard because they have the cheapest funds, and buy a mutual fund index. And I wish they would do it, Tony. I really do.
Okay, because there is a symbol called the IVV, which you can actually get for free each time.
IVV, that's an ETF, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's an ETF on the S&P 500.
Yeah.
But there's no charge for it when you buy.
You mean there's no transaction fee? In other words, you buy
it. No transaction fee.
But there's always...
Transaction.
Yeah, every one of these, every ETF, every mutual fund has an annual fee that they charge. ETFs are usually cheaper than mutual funds, but they do have an internal fee that does affect you. But it is. It's iShares Core S&P 500, that IVV. Okay, I'll do that.
All right.
Thanks, Tony. I appreciate it.
Thanks very much.
Now, problem is that also another problem, besides people can't do it, but there's a point where you get older and older and maybe you should reduce your risk than being exposed to the S&P 500. So risk management comes into play. But if you do it for 20, 30 years, it'll be fine. You'll be fine. We're here live 4 to 5 Pacific time each day. If you're listening at the time, you can talk to us live, 888-99-CHART. If not, you still can call. It's a 24-hour listener line. Let's go to Steve in Anaheim. How you doing, Steve?
I have my money in a lot of different places. I have some deferred comp. I have 401ks. Huh? But I also have some money in annuities. And I always hear a lot of the investment programs talking about annuities are not so great. Why they're not so good.
Remember, annuities are an insurance product. They're very complex. They're legalese. If you ever try to read that annuity document, you would probably get lost, okay?
Exactly.
And that works to the insurance company's benefit, obviously, because it is confusing. Attorneys can't figure that darn thing out. So I used to be in the insurance business, Steve. I know what they do. But let's make it simple. Why aren't annuities good? Because I don't like them either. Why? The thing that they hook you on is they guarantee you a return, right? It could be as good as 5, 6, 7% a few years ago. Bad thing about annuities, here's a couple of things. One, you were required to hold on to them for a certain length of period of time, usually 7 to 10 years.
Yeah.
Number two, if it is an annuity that's tracked to the stock market, do you have choices? Like, can you buy the S&P 500 index or mutual funds or something like that?
I think it is, yes. I'm
okay.
Pretty sure.
So what they do is they give you choices to buy the stock market. But there's fees for this. The annuity, the insurance company charges you a fee. The mutual fund that you're buying charges you a fee. And the annuities are very high. Their fees are very, very high. They're kind of hidden, but they're very high. They also limit your return. You can't make as much as the stock market in 10 years. And the reason why they have holding periods, 10 years, because there's never been a 10-year period in the stock market's history where the stock market has not gone up. They know it's going to go up. That's why they can guarantee you that money. Now, annuities are a tax-deferred instrument. You never use an IRA to buy an annuity because it's already a tax-deferred instrument. But what happens in an annuity is you get a false sense of its growth because you don't have to pay taxes. You don't have to pay capital gains taxes until you sell it. When you sell it 10 years from now, all the capital gains that has been built up in that annuity are due. That means your return, you say, oh, I made 20%. Great. Maybe you only made 10% because you haven't paid the taxes yet.
Oh, gosh.
And you don't know what that tax responsibility is. They don't know that until you sell it. So there's a lot of little negatives when, Steve, you could just go buy an S&P 500 index outside the annuity, and you'll do much better if you held it for the same length of time.
Well, that's thanks why. For the info. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate the call. Annuities, everybody, it's only for special situations, really special situations that you would want it. And usually that's trying to transfer your money to the next generation. Very, very special. Okay, PIMCO withdrawal rate. PIMCO is the world's largest bond fund manager. I remember Bill Gross worked there, and they fired him, and it was his company that he started. Okay, because the bad performance. For 2 years, they've underperformed their peer group, 2 years straight. And they used to be always overperforming. But they're still $1.68 trillion fund. Last month, for January, $11.6 billion. And the month before, $19.4 billion were withdrawn from the fund, people cashing in. And January was 21 months in a row. Money being pulled out. Now you would think that that would be detrimental to bond funds because PIMCO is nothing but a bond fund manager. And they've taken these billions of dollars out. That means they have to liquidate these bond funds to give these people their money. But the problem is bond fund demand, these people are just leaving PIMCO. They're putting it right back in with somebody else. Or there's more buyers coming into the market than selling. So I thought that was interesting. And they have trailed their peer group for the last 2 years. This is why people are redeeming. Not just because Bill Gross is leaving or left. It's because it hasn't been doing so well. So their peer group, remember, their peer group is up. And so they're... You go from the best to the worst, I guess. I don't know. Maybe back to the best. You're listening to Invest Talk. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley. If you're looking for a money management solution, please take a look at our balanced income portfolio. It controls risks. Steady yield for the risk adverse. From our registered investment advisor firm, KPP Financial, we provide that stuff. You can find more about it on our website at investtalk.com.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Let's go to Eddie in Sacramento. Hi, Eddie. How you doing?
Good afternoon. Mm-hmm. If it's not going to teach me how to make money in the market, where in the heck do I find out the information and get the knowledge that investors acquire?
Very good question. You need to start reading. I know that doesn't sound exciting, but I'll give you a couple of books that you can look at that you can get out of the library or buy, and they're kind of for the beginners, very easy reads by people who have been in the industry, who've been very successful, and they're written in a fashion to try to give you a feel for how this works.
Okay.
Go to our website at vesttalk.com. A couple of very good books is 1,000 Miles from Wall Street by Tony Gray. And if you can't write these down, you can go to our website. We record our shows at besttalk.com, and you can listen to it. Common Stocks and Uncommon Profits by Kenneth Fitcher. And Peter Lynch has a very good book, Beating the Wall Street. Or I would suggest you start with those books. They're very easy, and it kind of gives you a good idea of how this stuff works. And if I can give you one kind of rule of thumb, buy stocks that make money. There's too many story stocks, too many hot tips. Don't do any of that.
Uh-huh.
Buy stocks that have good earnings and are growing their earnings. That's a very simple thing to do. And you can find that out by most websites. So I started trying to read a little bit on some of these books, get a feel for how the market works and why this stock or that industry works and goes up. And you really can teach yourself if you have the interest.
What kind of money can a person expect to make in the market?
There is an element and a feeling of gambling in the stock market. There is that there. Think about it this way. When you're buying a stock, you're buying a piece of that company. If that company is making a lot of money, you're the owner of that company. The action of the stock price may go up or down. You don't know. But if the company is making money over a period of time, the price of stock may fluctuate differently than the earnings. So what you want to do is focus on the earnings, because eventually the stock price will go up to reflect that increased earnings. It may take time. People think they can get in, get rich quick, and then get out. That's not how it is in the stock market. That's how it was in the 1990s, but not anymore. The stock market is going to return you, on average, 10% a year, including dividends, because it has for 70 years. Okay?
Great. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
InvestTalk is your one-hour appointment with the money managers to help you do your retirement right. If you have questions about your 401k, your IRA, or are mutual funds best for you, or should you be thinking about investing in individual stocks? What's the difference between a broker and a portfolio manager? This is your hour. Call in with your question, 888-99-CHART, and get in on InvestTalk.
Okay, before you retire, these are my own. I made these up myself. This is what you need to do. Before you retire, and hopefully a few years before you retire, not just right as you retire, decide what you want to do in retirement. What is it you want to do? Whatever the definition of retire in your mind is, you decide what you want to do. Because it's really a mind state of mind. What am I going to do with my time? You can make money. You can not make money. You can continue to work at your career, not work at some other career, pick something else up, do voluntary work. I don't care. But decide what you want to do and be very certain and comfortable in what you want to do. Check what you need as far as money on a monthly basis, and then make sure that's what you have available on a monthly basis. So come up with your budget and make sure it makes sense. Make sure you consider inflation. Make sure you consider everything that you spend. And I'm including vacations and going to dinners. You don't want to be retired and say, I have absolutely no money and I can't do anything. You want to be comfortable. Another thing you might want to do, talk to other people that are retired. See what they say about it. These are not rocket science stuff. It's just common sense stuff that you should do because you're preparing yourself for retirement. And that's what I think you should do. Now, talk about housing. Everybody likes to know housing. What were the best? Colorado was the best. Connecticut, the worst home price growth in 2014. So Colorado was the best, up 8.4%. Now, it happens also that Colorado was one of the worst hit during the housing market crisis. But Colorado was the best, followed by Texas and then New York. 7, 8, 7.8% for Texas, 7.6%. Worst, Connecticut, Vermont, and Maryland, down 2.2% or so. And what is the forecast for this year? Overall, for all the whole market, they're saying it's going to be a 4.8% growth in house prices this year. We'll see. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley for Justin Klein and everyone at KPP Financial. I thank you for listening today, and we'll talk to you next tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.